hook, sinker, and line.
Oh, yes, indeedy, boys and girls. And it's alerts at ships at sea, ships on the lake, ships on the rocks, drinks on the rocks. That's what I want. I'm looking for a drink. Anybody have a spare vodka and tonic? That would be appreciated. Let's see. Fish and Frank here in the chair. The Blind Tarpon across from me, otherwise known as Robert. We got Captain Morris Campbell, freshwater guide extraordinaire, and RJ in the control booth. I can tell you, it's an extraordinary day out there. It's raining. It's dreary. I mean, it's the rain has been unbelievable today. Right before the show, we were all sitting around here talking about red tide, black tide. Yes, we have red tides and black tides nowadays, and they actually fight each other over the nutrients. And a lot of you are wondering, what did the storm do to the red tide? You get a lot of questions about that. Well, the beginning edge of this storm, as it was below us, was blowing the wind east to west. And so it was pushing it out into the Gulf for the days before the storm. Now, those were the critical days. After the storm, the wind blows from the west to the east, blowing whatever's left back up closer to us. But the good news is that the leading edge of the storm was blowing a lot of that stuff out. As it got pulled away from land, it got dispersed out into deeper water. The black tide diatom algae, black tide, actually was pushed out further into the Gulf and dispersed. The black tide and red tide were eating the same stuff, fighting over the stuff. It's the first time you actually wanted red tide to win because the black tide's worse than the red tide. But neither one won. The storm pushed it out towards deep water. It was dispersed as the storm went by us. We had winds out of the south, which made it even more dispersed. Last counts were pretty much nothing on the red tide or black tide. Everything's kind of coming back together again. Morse, you're out there home-based on a dock on Gaspereau Island, Boca Grande.
Yeah.
So what is there any fish out there, Boca, already?
Lots of fish around Boca Grande. We got snook, we got redfish, we have snapper, we have jacks, we have plenty of mullet. There's bait, there's white bait, there are thread herrings. Everybody's there. Ladyfish, all kind of goodies.
All right, now I'm going to take you guys back to World War I to kind of explain this, because if you watch any of the nightly news, they're so full of garbage. They wouldn't. If you watch the nightly news and they say it's daylight out or they say it's dark out, go look for yourself, because they have no idea what they're talking about. All the TV news stations are agenda-driven. They're just there to make things sound bad. They don't care about the truth. They care about their agendas. And that's every network out there right now. So what actually happened, take World War I. There was millions of people died. And, it was bad. Nobody actually won World War I. Believe it or not, why is this relevant to the fishing? Well, in World War I, everybody got the flu, the Spanish flu. Millions of people died. The Germans got sick. The Allies got sick. Everybody just said, okay, we're sick. We're going home. But did that mean there was no people left in Europe? No, it doesn't. That just means a certain amount died. It's very catastrophic, and it's always sad. But life goes on. And speaking of life going on, I just want to take a minute, and we're going to get right to the fishing, I promise. A number of years ago, in 2004, one morning I'm out doing a charter, catching tarpon, come home, clean up the yard, there's a hurricane in the Gulf, and all of a sudden, that afternoon, my house, my store, and my belongings were gone. The next morning, we find ourselves standing at the house, and the wife is holding some stuff, and she's like, there's nowhere to put anything. Everything's wrecked. It's just demolished. And we went around and found our family and friends, and we went to the store, and we had to get all this bait out of the freezers and all the dead bait out of the tanks, and everything was gone. Everything was just horribly demolished. And you would think with fishing tackle, well, it got wet, big deal. But it was the insulation, it was the dirt that blew in. There was literally nothing in the store we could save. There was a lot of tears, a lot of heartache, a lot of post-traumatic stress. PTSD, I think is what it's called, post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of people get that after the hurricanes. You don't know you're getting it, but hurricanes can do this. And I'm just bringing it up because I can remember standing there in the yard of the house, and there's nowhere to pick stuff up off the ground. You pick it up, and what are you going to do? Move it over to somewhere else, and there's nothing you can do. And you go to the store, and everything's just wrecked and gone and demolished. And that's what's going on in people's lives right now, up in the Panhandle, probably all the way up into Georgia. Because it doesn't matter how broad the devastation is. If your house is destroyed, a tornado spawned by one of these things, you go there and all of a sudden everything's gone. That's a catastrophic storm, whether one house is destroyed or 10,000 homes are destroyed. Morris just went through on one of Irma where it flooded his house out, and he's still fighting with the insurance company from Irma, and his house is barely livable, and it's something we deal with down here in Florida. But you also deal with it. When I was in Wisconsin, I watched tornadoes tear people's houses apart, their barns. Whether it's one house or 10,000, just want you guys to know our hearts are with you.
Yes, indeed.
It's unbelievably devastating to, we all know personally how bad this is. And we just want to say, you know, we're thinking of you, North Florida, Alabama, Georgia. You know, our hearts are with you. I don't know what we're going to be able to do to help, but if we can figure something out, we will. So anyway, hearts and minds go to those people because we lived it. Good news on the other side, boys. Boys and girls, I have a new house. We have a new store that's twice as big as it was a couple weeks ago. It's coming together more and more each day. There's nothing really to see yet, but give us another week. And by November, we're going to kind of wow this area. I mean, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is what we have here. It's pretty cool. And the good news is, it wasn't that long ago that we had nothing. And the store, Fish and Frank's, was gone. My house was gone. The only thing I had left was my pickup truck and my boat. And the boat actually had something flew into it, smashed the thing where the fuel goes in. And so my boat wasn't even working. So I guess I had my truck. But had to wife the truck. What more do you need to start over again? Anyway, getting back into this, redfish are literally everywhere right now. If you go out, there is redfish. I mean, it's some of the best redfishing of the last 15 years. It's literally amazing. For a place where everything's dead and there's no fish and everybody's sick, we're all in the hospital. You know, we're doing this from ICU because, you know, I listen to the news at night and they said I'm in ICU because nobody can live here and not be sick. BS. All right. Anyway, redfish everywhere. Robert, tell us about all these wonderful redfish.
Well, pretty much anywhere you go on the east side, the west side, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, the whole backside of Boca Grande. I mean, anywhere where there's some shoreline and bushes has got quite a few redfish on them, and a lot of them are singles and doubles.
Now, the best bait right now is actually crabs, right?
Correct.
The problem is crabs are kind of hard to find.
Very.
So, Morris, if you can't find blue crabs, what's your go-to number two shot?
Well, on the redfish, you know, we're you know, it's nice to be talking about red fish instead of red tide. Let me say that first and foremost. But, you know, we actually have bait. We have pinfish. We have mutton minnows. We have little mullet. We have big mullet. We have ladyfish. And all of those make excellent redfish bait. And if you're so inclined, you can catch these redfish on artificials, any type of soft plastics, you know, scented plastics.
I'm going to say right now the gulp would probably be my go-to.
Fish bites or gulp?
Fish Bites is excellent. Now, I just bought, I made a deal with Fish Bites, the factory, and they're made here in Florida. I have bought two of every single thing they make. We're going to have a massive wall of Fish Bites coming in because it is, in my opinion, the best fake bait you can buy.
It is. I mean, you know, our redfish are very similar to another fish that I spent a lot of time chasing in the Bahamas, and that's the bonefish. And both of those are scent feeder extraordinaires. And you put a piece of Fish Bites out there, and you could just let it lay on the bottom like a piece of bait. And either one of those, redfish, bonefish,
have you
one.
Seen their lures? They got swim baits and all the rest of
yes,
that.
Yes, and it's scented.
They have so much stuff. I couldn't afford to buy multiples of everything. But I've known the guys at the factory a long time, so we were able to go broad, not deep, and I can afford to do it. But we're literally getting every single thing they make. Every color, every style, everything is going to be... We got new pegboard walls going up. We're going to double the amount of soft plastics we carry. And Fish Bites is going to be front and center because it is the go-to. Now, Robert, what's your... If you can't get blue crabs for redfish, what's going to be your best bet?
I'll probably go with frozen shrimp just because it's easy to get. I don't have to try to catch it in a cast net or on a sabiki. And the amount of bycatch of other fish that I'm going to get along with it has been... going to be more productive personally.
Now you're ordering the regular frozen shrimp and the larger ones, right?
Correct.
Now, do you think you need the great big ones, or do you think the smaller, like normal size shrimp would be okay? I'm going to just go for, because, and I don't think it's necessary, but I think it makes me feel better with the bigger ones.
Yeah, I think that's more of the thing, is that it's more of a feel-good thing. I think the one benefit you have of the bigger shrimp out there is because there's so many mangrove snapper and pinfish and other little hobber-dobbers on the flats that just like to peck your bait apart, that big shrimp is going to maybe stay on there just a little bit longer to produce more scent and attract that redfish to it.
Now, RJ, are you a big hobber-dobber fisherman guy? I mean, I'm not exactly sure where Robert was going, but I think...
I have never. I'm never raising done. My right hand. I have never been accused of hobberdobbering ever.
Okay. All right. So if Morris is kind of leaning towards the artificials and maybe catching bait, Robert's on the frozen shrimp, where do you stand on redfish? Right now we know blue crabs are the best bait for them. That's what they're kind of keying in on. Is there, do you have anything that you would go with outside of the blue crab?
You know, I love artificials. I really feel the challenge of catching fish on artificials. And one of the things I've been successful with is the DOA shrimp for redfish. And I found that if you work them really slow, you hop them around down on the bottom, try not to make them move too far from where they are. They stir up, you stir up a little bit of stuff on the bottom when you do that. That seems to work well for me, is to do that.
One of the reasons that does work so well is if you buy a package of DOA shrimp, you open it up. To humans, it has one smell. But to fish, Mark Nichols buys farm-raised shrimp, grinds it up, and infuses it in the plastic of his shrimp. There is a pheromone-level attraction. I mean, people say, well, it doesn't smell that way to me. Well, if you walk around the room, a dog can follow you. While you're sitting there listening to this, believe it or not, parts of your body are falling off, landing on the floor. Little skin cells. And so you're losing pieces as we speak. I mean, look, another chunk of me just went down on the deck.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Yeah, well.
Everybody's cringing in here right now.
You should see the size of this piece, though.
Sure, I walk long, chunks fall off. What can I say? But a dog can follow those little skin cells that are falling off of you where you go. That's the difference between human and what fish can smell. Fish smell that ground up shrimp in the DOA plastic. They have a scent smelling capacity much similar to dogs, much different than humans. And it goes along with one of the things with the leader and the color of the leaders. When people are buying fluorocarbon and brown and pink and all these colors a liter. We know fish see colors, but we don't know how they see colors. If all four of us in here, there's a painting of some swans over there, and we say, oh, look, those swans are white, but one of you guys might see more gray in that than what I see. Everybody perceives colors slightly different.
I see eggshell.
You see eggshell. To me,
it's kind of purple.
It's okay. We got a purple going on. All right. We don't know how fish see color. We don't know how fish absorb light into their eyes. As humans go down in the water, say you're in the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic, or whatever, and you go down to 30 feet, red does not disappear. That was a lie told to you by line companies to get you to buy red line. Red turns to green at 30 feet. And in human eyes, as you go down, eventually, I think it's right around 60 feet or so, depending on water clarity, that it goes to, everything's black and white TV. You got white, black, and shades of gray. But that does not mean it's white, black, and shades of gray to fish. Fish may perceive light differently than what humans do, perceive colors differently. I can tell you, because of the old studies from the 1950s and 60s, done by Wisconsin Pharmaceuticals and Berkeley Lures, blue is the most visible color to fish. They did testing on all the different colors. Blue is the most visible. Does it mean it's you shouldn't use it or you should? No reference, but it is the most visible color. But we don't know if they see blue the same way as we do. So for I hear guys say, well, I put this in the water. When I look, this is more invisible than this. Well, who cares what it is to a human? We want to know what it is to a fish.
Tackle manufacturers care because you're selling it to humans, not fish.
Right. This is about selling it to people. They're not selling this tackle to fish. They're selling the tackle to human. So what the basic thing to do is find something that works for you. And that's the one that's the best. If you like green line, use green.
Whatever
if
you
like
have
yellow,
confidence
use
in.
Line, use yellow. I personally have a different color line, different color leader. Every one of my rods has a different color line on it. I have braided, I have monofilament. On a sidetrack, monofilament will catch more fish than braided line will. If you had two rods, one with monofilament, one with braided, and put the same leaders on, you will catch more fish with the mono you will with the braided. I will bet. Robert, what do you think?
I agree with you 100% on that one. I've seen it done too many times behind my house. You know, that I honestly don't know the 100% answer, but the theory that I can, you know, that we've come up with discussing this is the braid line has a different sense of harmonics under the water that the fish pick up on, the vibration of it. You know, is about the only thing that kind of makes sense to me. Whether there's current or no current, it still makes a drastic difference.
Here's a test for you. If you're out there fishing and it's a fairly windy day, stand two rods up in the boat and put the line down and put a little bit of tension on them and listen, and you will hear the one with the braiding on it making a humming noise under tension. Yeah, gives that whistling thing. And the mono does not do that. You don't get the same noise out of it. And it does make a whistle. It will make a noise. Picture a guitar. If you have an acoustic guitar, you can have one with plastic strings on it, or you can have one with steel strings on it. And they make different types of tones. And it seems like the braided line, when it's under pressure, and like you're using a sinker, it makes a noise different than the mono does. And we believe it runs fish off, and I think it's more visible. RJ, what do you think? Mono braided? Why would mono just catch so many more fish?
I'm going to go along with the sound. An old fishing guy down in the Keys once took me out for bonefish, and he looked at my rod, and he said, you got braided on, you can't use that. And I was a little, yeah, braided line, I want to use. He says, no, you can't. And he talked about the sound being one, and he said the part of the line that's in the air, you know, between your rod tip and the water is vibrating. He says, and that sound's going all the way down to your lure. He says, and that noise puts the bonefish off. And he said, the other thing is, he said, the braided line casts a shadow. And he said, that shadow, as it whips around along the bottom, is enough to put the bones off of bothering with your bait. And he was right. We caught a lot of bonefish that day, and I didn't use my braided line. Now, I know that's not a scientific experiment, but here's a guy that spent, Charlie Reese was his name, he spent his whole life down in the Keys fishing for bonefish, so I figure he knew what he was talking about.
It is scientific. It's called direct observation science. Mm-hmm. So, to me, that's just as science as reading it in a book or listening to it on the internet doesn't mean it's science. It just means it's another opinion. Morris, now, you do a lot of bone fishing.
I do.
Your input?
We catch them on braid all the time. I mean, almost 100% of the time. But, you know, by the same token, we're using braid line that literally looks, is the same color as the sky, or it's broken up into color patterns where it's not throwing one complete color pattern. Any line, you know, be it monofilament or braid, if you're not careful with it, it will throw a shadow. Braid throws a much deeper shadow and will spook a fish a lot quicker than mono. I personally would prefer to fish with mono.
Mono's more difficult to deal with.
It is.
Because it has a memory. It gets twisted more. Braided will twist, but it takes more. But mono's easy to get twist out of. But
mono's more forgiving than braid too. It'll make up for someone's mistake in handling a fish on while it's on the line, whereas braid is not forgiving. There's no stretch factor.
Robert, what do you think? Braid more forgiving or mono more forgiving?
Mono's definitely more forgiving. I mean, it's like a wives' tale that braid line is more abrasion resistant, and under strain, it's a lot weaker than monofilament. So, you know, if you're fishing a lot of docks or mangroves, you're going to find that the mono is going to be a lot more abrasion resistant against all those barnacles and oysters.
Now, I will tell you, I do not recommend, absolutely do not fish monofilament on the mangroves. If you're fishing trees and heavy cover like that with monofilament, it's so hard to break. And if the hook pulls and it flies back at you, it's coming back like a missile, because that mono is stretched out like a bungee cord. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it lets go, and it's flying back at you like a 22. I mean, I've seen people with sinkers embedded in arms or legs because the mono all of a sudden snapped back. I always fish braided line against the mangroves, 20 pound test, because it's so easy to break. If I get hung up, I can give it a quick jerk, break it off, and it's safe. Monofilament is not safe against the mangroves. Too difficult to break. Braided is so easy to break. It really is. So I do heavy cover with braid. I do open water with mono, because I will catch many more fish with the monofilament. Now, if you're using braided line, you want to attach a leader with a swivel, 100% good. Braided line is 100% visible, a swivel is visible, and then you put your leader on the end of that. That's all good. It makes no difference. You will catch the same amount of fish with or without a swivel. Where that whole thing came in about swivel is going to spook the fish, and it's literally garbage. It doesn't. That's not true. But if you're using monofilament line with a mono or fluorocarbon leader, and then you put a piece of metal in between it, that is a visible spot. That does make it more visible. It cavitates the water differently. There's all this stuff that a swivel can do between mono and a mono leader or mono and a fluorocarbon leader. But if you've got braided line on, there is only the cavitation factor difference. The braided line is visible, the swivel is visible, and then you have the invisible leader. So it really makes no difference in the amount of fish percentage that you were going to catch with a swivel or without using braided line. But with mono, it's a diminishing return. Putting the swivel in there means you will probably get less hits than if you did not have the swivel. But with braided, straight across the board, didn't change the factor one bit. my opinion. Now, Robert, you different opinion? You got kind of a look.
No, I think that's a true statement without a doubt. But I think the other thing is like for me, if I'm in a scenario where I'm using a swivel because of maybe the type of lure that I'm using, I'm trying to reduce line twist or something like that. If I think that the fish are being, if the water's exceptionally clear and I think the fish have a better visual appearance on things, I go with a much longer leader than normal. It makes it a little bit of a hindrance to cast sometimes, but
and then you got to tie a dang FG knot.
Well, you can
or an Albright.
Well, yeah, but sometimes that's not practical. Sometimes it's not what I want to do for the situation I'm doing. So,
how about going with a small? If that's your scenario, how about going with a small ball bearing snap swivel attached directly to your lure?
Right, and you can do that too. I mean, I'm just thinking that there are certain times where I just will lengthen up my leader. Period.
All right, here's a scenario for you.
Okay,
you're in Africa. You're in the Congo.
Oh, my
what God. Would you fish for?
Goliath tigerfish.
Tigerfish, yeah.
Without a doubt.
You know what that is, Morris?
I know what a tigerfish is.
All right. RJ, you know what it is?
I do.
So I'm the only idiot here. Okay, I can deal with this. Go ahead. You guys talk about Goliath, giant, whatever. Go ahead.
What do you want to know about them? I've never caught one.
I'm going to the bathroom. You guys have fun.
Lures won't last very long with them.
I don't know. I want armed guards with me while I'm doing it.
Yeah, between them and the crocodiles. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. The people scare me far more than the crocodiles
do. I can deal with the crocodiles, the tigers, the elephants, and all that. I don't trust people. I'm good with the animals because I can either kill them or they'll kill me. You never know what the heck a human's going to do.
Right, well, I have the stupid question of the morning because it just popped into my memory. Spider wire, is it still around? Does anybody use it?
Yeah, we sell it, but it's a different form. They no longer make the old spider wire like you're talking about because that was actually a coated braided line, and the coating would break down, and it was literally horrible. It was great line for the first bit you were using it, and then the coating would start coming off, and it would chunk, and it was bad. But it was a great beginning to where it is. But now spider wire, like Invisibraid, Invisibraid which is a spider wire product, is the strongest, best casting. It blows away anything else. It is literally, and what's weird about it, when the other braided lines start getting fuzzy, it means they're breaking down a little bit. But spider wire is made to get fuzzier as you use it, making it more invisible, the same way as polar bear hair diffuses the light. That's what it's based on. So the fuzzier it gets, the more invisible it gets. It's diffusing the light around it. So as a line goes, I would rate Invisibraid by Spiderwire as the number one best line in the world right now. I mean, that's just me. But the only problem is it only comes in white right now. So next year they're bringing it out in like 5 colors or something like that. And a lot of that's my fault because I said, well, this one sucks. I'm not carrying anymore. This one's bad. I don't like it. This one's not good. And so in order to get me to buy, because I buy a lot of line, and which means I spend a lot of money with them. So I told them, no, I won't carry this and this and this anymore. We're done. I said, I've tried it. It's okay, but I don't think it's great. Invisibraid's the best, but this stuff, a lot of lacking. So they are now going to make me Invisibraid in all these other colors. So I'm a little excited about that happening.
And RJ's got an interesting question, though, because there's a lot of people out there that, A, fished when they were younger and are just now maybe becoming an age where they're getting ready to retire and are thinking about going back into fishing again. Well, when they started doing that with their career, when they finished, they were just learning about spider wire, which was one of the first braided lines out back in the day, and it was horrible. It wrecked rod guides back in the day because they were made completely different. You know, it wrecked reels because reels really weren't made for them at the time. There's been so many innovations with the technology of reels, rods, and all the braided lines that are on the market, and it's not the answer. Braid line is not the answer at all, but it is a new type of way to go about fishing.
Look at a 99 Dodge truck. Cool looking, but the biggest piece of garbage that ever drove down the street. There's nothing worse than a 99 Dodge pickup truck.
Right.
They fall apart. You hit a bump and the dash cracks and falls in. That 99 Dodge was literally one of the worst pieces of junk in the world. But now you step forward to 2018 and they've got the diesel Dodge. They actually put decent materials into them. It's not a bad truck now.
No.
But then it was horrible.
Correct.
So you can... The only reason I bring that up is because if Dodge could fix that piece of junk they had, the 1960 Dodge trucks were some of the best that ever rolled down the highway. And they were living on their reputation because they were building some of the worst vehicles in the world in the 90s. And then now in 2018, they've actually stepped it up and made them better again. And this is the same evolution you see with braided line. Some of the original attempts at making them were just catastrophically bad. Who knows what they were thinking. But now in 2018, we've got different versions, same name, but a different version of that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are pretty good. I owned a 99 Dodge truck. You cannot get a worse vehicle than a Dodge. But now I see a lot of these Dodge trucks. I'm like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And I'm seeing them last. They don't fall apart. You can actually hit a bump without the dash collapsing in on it. So maybe they got something now. The same thing can be said for the fishing line. It starts out one way, but they kept the name because it has name recognition and upgraded the product.
Sure, exactly. And the other thing is, each person is going to be a little bit different. That's why there are so many different brands of braid, just like there are so many different brands of mono. You're going to find that this braid may not necessarily work as well for you with your technique of fishing versus another person with their technique of fishing. Frank and I had the biggest issue with monofilaments. He had one type of 12-pound monofilament on his exact same rod and reel that we had. And my line was totally different than his. If we switched rods, we both ended up with a tangled mess.
Well, I like a lot softer line. Mm-hmm. You were throwing big game,
mm-hmm.
and I was throwing a very soft line, very completely different chemical makeup on it. But the one I liked was a lot softer. You liked that harder line. When you tried throwing the soft stuff, knots, problems, it has to do with how you move your wrist when you cast, how you flick the rod, if you're a smooth cast or one of those flicker guys where you're cracking the whip. Every type of casting, the rod and reel together, the way you cast, all determine what brand of line is going to be best for you. Because Power Pro is good, but it's so rough, it's literally like using a hacksaw. But it won't hurt the guides, but it limits the distance you can throw. It's a very short casting line, Power Pro is. But it's much stiffer, so for some people, they can cast it without throwing knots all day. Then you get into something like Suffix 832 or Invisibraid that's unbelievably soft and supple and will cast a lot farther. For the guys who learn to cast with Power Pro, it's very hard to switch over.
Right.
Because you got so much more line coming off the reel, it wants to throw a lot farther. And that Suffix 832 will literally, if you have the same rods and the same lure, it will probably cast 20, 30 feet farther than the Power Pro. But if you're not used to it, you're going to throw knots with it.
Well, exactly. So each person needs to take their time, and braided line is expensive, more expensive than monofilament, but you've got to be willing to give a couple of different brands a try until you find that right one that works best for you, rather than saying, oh, braid line is still garbage the way it was 20 years ago, and go back to moving on to your mono that you've always stuck with. And it's not that you have to switch to braid, but you got to find that right one that suits you for your best scenario.
Yeah, you tune your equipment to the way that you fish,
right,
and you become a better fisherman for it.
Exactly.
And your best bet, if you don't know if you're going to do the real soft lines or the hard lines, is to go with either high seas or fins. They're right in the middle. High seas and fins are dead in the center. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not real soft. They're not real hard. They're pretty smooth, but not ultra smooth. So they're middle of the route. They're two right dead in the center.
Right.
And where you've got Suffix 832 and Invisibrate on the soft end, you got Power Pro on the hard, stiff end, and then you can drop right with high seas or fins right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, no, that works.
It's kind of like the Three Bears going fishing. You know, your line's too soft, your line's too hard. You've got to find the one that's just right for you.
It feels just right.
No, that's right. True.
I want to get into freshwater fishing right now. RJ, you're one of the bass guys. All right, tell me where your best bass hole is.
Well, I'm not ever going to tell you that. But they're everywhere right now because of the water levels being so high in the canals. There's people catching things right here on Biscayne, you know, in the canals behind Biscayne, and they're catching some pretty big fish, too. So, yeah, the bass are all over the place, and I think the tilapia are all over the place now, too. So thanks to all this rain that we've had, now's the time to go freshwater fishing.
With all this rain we're getting today, rain hitting the surface of the water provides a lot of oxygen. The rainwater's nice and cool. The water temp's going to drop. You get high oxygen levels, cool water. Great time. Morris, what's your best advice freshwater fishing right now?
Get out there and get something in the water because it's time. I mean, just basically, I've been noticing a lot of people buying wigglers and night crawlers. And, you know, they're catching bluegills and shellcrackers and big tilapias, Mayan cichlids with it. You're going to catch some bass on it as well. And get out there and put some baits in the water because it's time to catch them.
Robert, freshwater advice. Morse, before you, where's a place that you would head to?
RJ was just talking about, you know, the Biscayne canals here, or, you know, Northport canals. Very good places to go. The canal, the waterways, freshwater waterways in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda area, little ponds and things like that.
Well, I was kind of loaded. Didn't know if you had a spot that you would kind of like. Robert, freshwater advice.
Personally, the tilapia bite and the Mayan cichlids have been doing really good, and the bluegill been starting to get a lot more reports on those. So worms is where I'd stick with that. But with the bass fishermen, honestly, right now, I'd be throwing shiners would be my first choice because they're just consistently working. But a couple tricks in the last month or so with these guys that have been catching some pretty quality bass have actually been either no bobber at all or putting a small weight on them and getting them down deeper into the water column. So depending on the canal system you're fishing or a pit or a lake itself where you've got some good drop-offs, try to get that shiner to go down just a little bit further. And then again, the other incidental bycatch with that in some of these places have
big
been some
catfish.
Really big catfish. Yeah, the bullheads and the channel catfish have been doing really well, and they'll wreck a shiner. So you kind of can get the best of both worlds out of that.
Myakka River, if you want a specific spot, freshwater areas, Snookhaven area.
Like above
Snookhaven?
Yes.
Above Snookhaven?
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't know how wet it is up there right now because I haven't been up there this summer, but there's a place just off of River Road past Snookhaven that's accessible by shore, and it's a Sleeping Turtle Preserve. I think you've got it on our website.
It's on the website, yeah.
And there's a couple trails that parallel right along the edge of the river, and it's beautiful back in there. There's these oak trees.
When I put that up 2 years ago, a guy was catching bull sharks up there.
Right. At certain times of year, tarpon, snook, and sharks will get up there too. But right now, you got quite a bit of fresh water coming out of there. And another area that's underrated is Myakka State Park. Fishing right there off the bridges there at Myakka State Park. The guys are catching a lot of nice tilapia up there right now. There's a lot of water up there, so you really can't walk the bank of the river itself in the park. But there's several bridges and one spill dam up there that you can fish right in the park from shore. So it gives you a couple of options because a lot of people, freshwater, it's hard to access them with a boat. And a lot of people don't have boats, so having those land-based spots to go to are always kind of nice.
Absolutely. We got Audubon Park in Port Charlotte. I have that up on fishandfranks.com. I have a page for that. We've got the Hathaway Park. We have Prairie Creek, 760 Bridge. I mean, there's so many places. If you're in Port Charlotte, if you go right along Harbor, take a right on Gibraltar, you've got some great canals off there, off Olean. There's some great canals there for freshwater fishing.
There's a spot one minute down the road from here, Deer Prairie Creek.
Yeah, Deer Prairie
Creek. There's a nice little lake there.
You know,
nice
I forgot to put the directions on that. I put up this page with it. I started building it. I got some pictures and stuff up. I was looking at it with somebody today. I never put the directions on where it is. So I'll have that fixed. What's that place with the dam here in Northport? I forget.
Cocoa Plum Canal?
No. I forget what it is. It's on fishandfranks.com. I know that.
There's that little dam that we went to?
No, that's at Deer Prairie Creek.
Right.
I'm not
familiar with that one at all.
I'm on the wrong page here.
But there's a lot of really, really cool areas to go freshwater fish right now, and it's very well worth it.
Productive.
And if you're an artificial lure fisherman, the way this overcast has been,
top waters,
absolutely. And you may notice over the next several days that the top water might even get a little bit better because of this rain. The frogs should be active, and with this real humid mornings, all of your different kinds of frogs, whether it's a simple
Blue Ridge Park,
yes, got a Blue great Ridge canal Park and is, dam there. Yep.
Yeah, it's gorgeous there,
and it's a quiet, out of the way place. It's not well trafficked.
Yeah, if you go on fishandfranks.com, maps of where to go fishing, and then go down to the freshwater, it's like the second one listed on the freshwater. It shows a map from Fish and Franks out to the place. But that's a gorgeous place to go. It's a great place just to go walk along the bank, do some casting by the dam, and then just work your way down the shoreline. Speaking of canals, what's up in the saltwater canals right now? Robert, what do we got?
PGI canals, I've been getting a lot of mixed reports along with some good ones in the Port Charlotte canals. The black drum of good size. I mean, most of them were very large size, like 25 pounds plus, and then quite a few big snook being caught up inside there along with a whole lot of juvenile tarpon. And with this flood, hurricane coming by, I'm basically building up all the water into all the canals right now. Now that it's passed, the water is going to really dump out quickly. So what that does is it displaces a lot of your smaller fish and crabs that are way up into those canals and creeks and sucks them out to the mouths of the canals where you'll have great volumes of moving water. So a lot of those fish will stage up at the mouths of any canal. And it doesn't matter if you're way back into a canal system. If you're fishing from a boat, you can get at the entrance of your canal where it meets the other canal, because that's going to be a pinch point and create some good water flow. So
you're not exactly talking about where the canals meet the harbor.
Not necessarily.
What you're talking about is an intersection between canals.
Correct.
Where stuff is being literally pulled from the very dead end of the canal out towards the main carrier canal.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's been some really good fish activity going on right now. Well, now, speaking of being sucked out with all that stuff, you've got a lot of debris.
I feel that way all the time right now.
a lot of debris getting sucked out of the canals right now. This storm surge that we had picked up some wood and different debris out of people's yards, some docks that were probably not maintained very well, stuff like that. I saw a limb coming down my canal today that was about 16 or 18 inches in size floating down the canal.
You can find some deadheads out there and usually end up finding them with the hull of your boat or with your prop. So keep an extra eye on the water as you're moving around Charlotte Harbor or the near Gulf right now. There is much more of a chance of a piling or a tree limb. If you're going back on the flats, be careful. Just because you ran there a week ago doesn't mean there isn't a tree floated up in there. Stuff fall into the water, palm trees float, things move around. Now is the time to really watch where you're going, because you're more likely to find something that wasn't there a week ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing about it. There's always going to be the possibility of something floating in the water that's very hard to see. Deadheads are like pilings or trees that are floating straight up and down. They're a real booger. If they're floating horizontal on the surface, they're much easier to see. But if they're floating right, you know, straight up and down with just the end of it bobbing up and down, makes them harder to hit, but it makes much more of an impact when you do.
It sure does.
So you got to be careful out there, but that's every day. But right now, double eye on the water.
Absolutely.
You know,
and as it gets dark in the evenings or early in the mornings, just slow down a bit. Your vision is limited anyway. You can't see these things, especially at dusk or in pre-dawn hours. So just take a little more time.
Yeah, just go a little bit slower for a while till you actually know what's going to be there. Because right now, anything could be there. And just because you've ran that way every day for the last 10 years and you were fine, doesn't mean you are today. Morris, what's going on in the canals out by, like, Widden Creek, the bays?
It's loaded Gaspar with fish Island. Out there.
What's going on in those canals in Boca Grande? Because those are usually extraordinary with the red tide.
There's no red tide anymore, and, you know, it happens with every red tide. Everybody thinks, oh, everything is gone, it's dead, you know, it's going to be years before it ever comes back. And as soon as the red tide disappears, they're back. Where'd they come from? Well, somewhere. I've been personally catching nice snook in the Boca Grande Bayou. Those canals there's some really, really nice mangrove snapper in there. I mean, we're talking 15, 16, 17 inches. There's some baby tarpon in there. You know, all kind of things. Speckled trout can be found on the outside. In another month, you're going to find speckled trout actually up in there because they're going to be coming into those canals and bayous. And it's a phenomenon that we really enjoy because not a lot of people actually fish for them, but you can actually catch some quality speckled trout.
And here you are talking about it on the radio shows.
Well, they won't do it because they don't believe it.
Yeah, well, they won't believe it anyway.
They don't believe snooker out in the Gulf either.
We have a reporter here from NBC. Oh, never mind. From some...
Now, if I was with CNN, you know, I could understand them not believing me. But.
Okay. those are all legitimate stations that have their own trademarks and are probably... believable, probably. Anyway, going on here, Robert, snappers on the flats this is like they're kind of inundated.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of reports. You know, last year we talked about all the little snapper that were out there, like piranhas, and everyone thought it was pinfish, and it turned out to be, you know, 4, 5, and 6 inch
snapper. Yeah.
You know, but right now, for the last couple of weeks, we've been getting a lot of reports of guys that are fishing for those redfish and snook are catching 10, 12, 13, even 14-inch mangrove snapper fishing along the bushes in some of those deeper sand holes.
Isn't that terrible?
So, yeah. Yeah, it's a really horrible incidental bycatch. You know, now, it's the only drawback is you go through about twice as much shrimp as you would think you would.
Yeah. It's a good time to have some fish bites with you.
Right, absolutely.
You put the little chunks on and get through. The problem is there's literally millions of mangrove snappers on the flats right now from about 2-3 inches all the way up to about 14 inches. The problem is some of the snappers are bigger than the trout out there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some trout out there, but the majority of the trout are really small. If you're willing to be patient and you can get yourself some pinfish, whether you buy them or try to sabiki them or cast net a few, you drift along with those pinfish under a bobber out there on the flats, and that's where you'll find your bigger keeper-sized trout. Your smaller trout usually tend to ignore those pinfish, so you've got a better chance of catching a bigger trout, but you're not going to catch great numbers of them, but it's definitely going to be better quality.
All right, so what we're talking about to find possibly a bigger keeper-sized trout is to take a float, not necessarily a popping cork, although that's fine, and you go down, you want to be about 6 inches to a foot off the bottom, so vary your leader to get that adjustment. Then what you're going to do is put a pinfish on. Now, I'm using usually a 3-aught to 4-aught. I use an octopus hook. You can do other things. Now, under a float, I tend to hook my pinfish just back of center across the dorsal fin. So that he's pulling it, I put the hook in one side of him and out the other, kind of across his back, just behind center of the dorsal fin. That way he's upright and pulling it. If I put it through the fish's nose, he has a hard time pulling that. It always wants to turn him around, tires him out more. If I put it through his back and go just behind center, he's literally can just pull that bobber with him more. He's swimming better with it. He's more upright. It's a little more positive hook set, hooking a pinfish through the nose. But I tend to do that when I'm freelining a bait and I'm not using a bobber or a sinker. When I'm under a float, I like that just back of center, side to side, through the back of the bait fish, just back there. It allows him to be more upright, give him a better pull on the bobber. No, but I'm using a little bigger hook than average because that fish, when he engulfs that pinfish, because he's going to try and take the whole thing in, I find I get a more, if I'm hooking him through the nose or the mouth, I'm using a smaller hook because that's right where the fish is striking. But when he's under his back, I'm going up a couple sizes.
Mm-hmm. I'll agree with that. So instead of using, say, a 1-0 or a 2-0 for the nose, you're going to jump up to like a 3-0, possibly a 4-0?
Yeah.
Okay. And that makes sense. And generally speaking, you know, like me personally, I don't use a circle hook. I'm using strictly a J hook when I like, just it's my personal preference. But if I'm nose hooking them or I'm anal fin hooking them, I still like a Kaylee hook, just like I'm shiner there fishing for bass.
I'd rather have a Kaylee hook if I was doing a nose hook bowl. Just looking, I know we're down to just the last minute and a half of the show here. We got a lot of tarpon out in the harbor. We've got them in the pass. We got them in the hole. They're really key to them. Robert, real quick, what do you need for tarpon?
Ladyfish. Ladyfish are definitely the key thing they're feeding on.
So you got a choice if you want to catch tarpon of a ladyfish, or second best is a ladyfish, or third best is a ladyfish.
Definitely.
Okay.
You know, they're really feeding heavy.
That was pretty good. I like how you did that ranking.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes is, you know. Freshwater fish going crazy right now. We got a ton of freshwater fish out there. From Mayan cichlids, largemouth bass, freshwater catfish. Always everybody's, that's a kind of a must-have for a fall dinner because they got their meat's really good right about now. A little bit of floating debris around the harbor. You got to be a little careful. We got redfish all over the flat. Shaw Harbor is loaded with redfish right now. This is some of the best red fishing of the last 10 years or so. There is a lot of redfish out there.
Yeah, it's been really impressive. And there are some schools of redfish out there, but they've been scattered all over the place. Nobody's really talking about them in consistent spots or consistent areas. They're just hopscotched everywhere.
So the best idea is to get out there and cover some water and look around and find your redfish and enjoy the day out catching fish.
Yeah, and observing.
If you want to get out and catch a large, like a 10-pound bass, if that's your dream, call Captain Morris Campbell. You can get a hold of him through Fish and Franks. And Morris does guide trips all over the state, freshwater. He goes on the hunt for all these big 10-pounders and plus. And, you know, you can hire him to catch you these big fish. You can get them through Fish and Franks at Captain Morris Campbell if you're looking for your 10-pound plus bass. Robert, the blind tarpon, is the guy across from me. RJ's the man in the booth up there in the control center. And I'm Frank, Fishing Frank.
And he is Frank.
Yeah, my name really is Frank, and I do own Fishing Franks, and it kind of makes me Fishing Frank.
Isn't it amazing how that worked out?
And we're working on Fishing Franks right now. The store is going to be twice the size it was just a week or two ago. And in about a week or two, there's going to be some really cool stuff to see. By the end of November, it's going to be worth taking a walk in the door. I think you're going to be surprised. All right, boys and girls, we will catch you on the next Fish and Franks Radio Fishing Talk, whatever. Well, this show doesn't have a name, but it is about fishing. Bye, boys and girls.